Hello, I'm Robert Bounds, and this is the Monocle Culture Show. Now, London has just recovered from Freeze Week, and while the big white tents are being packed up in Regent's Park, there are still plenty of art-shaped remnants in galleries across the capital. In fact, maybe now's the time to see them. Over the past few years, one of the week's opening highlights has become whatever is on at the store on the Strand. The collaboration between the store and the Vinyl Factory has given us big show-stopping multimedia exhibitions by the Hayward and the Listen Galleries over the past 2 years. But this time round, they've dialed up New York's new museum, who've popped over to show us what they've got. Their new show is called Strange Days, Memories of the Future, and it's all video art. And to talk me through it today, I'll be joined by the art writer and curator, Francesca Gavin, and chief contributing editor for the art newspaper, Gareth Harris. Francesca and Gareth, welcome to the programme. Nice to have you here.
Hello.
How are the Freeze war wounds holding up? Gareth, are you fighting fit?
I don't feel that fit at the moment. It was a tough week. There was a lot on. There was the usual round of fairs, exhibitions, but you know, it's the cultural offering in London during the week, and it's fantastic.
Francesca, you feel well-rounded and culturally nourished?
I do. I feel like I had a very hearty meal of art throughout the week.
Yeah.
I also realised it's the first Freeze I've not gotten sick by the end of the week, so I'm very proud of myself. Ginger shots.
Ginger shots?
How to survive an art fair, ginger shots.
Okay. Do you have indigestion?
No.
You said it was a hearty meal.
No. No, yeah. I feel very sated by my art diet of the week.
That's true.
Because often I think you've come in to talk us through your take on Freeze Week, and you're a little hoarse, but you sound...
I mean, I get over-enthusiastic and I talk and the voice just kind of goes with that.
It's easy to get overstimulated during Freeze Week.
It is.
We can move kind of seamlessly on then to Strange Days, Memory of the Future at the store on the Strand, because there's a lot to see just in that one exhibition of video art. How well does it work in that kind of cavernous space that we should say isn't designed for art? There's all sorts of things happening in this old office block. How does it work, Francesca?
I mean, for me, this is the third exhibition they've had within here. The first one, most noticeably done by Ralph Rogoff, the next curator of the Venice Biennial from the Hayward Gallery, really kind of set the precedent of using the space for video, and I think it's when it works best. Normally, the past two shows that they've done have been the upper rooms. These were like subterranean, going downwards. So it was like this. I mean, this building goes on for miles and miles, but it really used it well. It's quite like a maze of different spaces. There is a lot of work here, but most of the work is truly brilliant. It's very, very well curated.
There's over 12 hours of stuff. Now, one of the pieces, Ragnar Kjartansson's Sorrow, or Lots of Sorrow, or None More Than Sorrow, whatever it ends up being called, is 6 hours of that stuff. How palatable is all this wealth of video art, Gareth? How many times do you think you probably have to see it, to take it all in, I wonder?
I went yesterday. I spent about 3.5 hours in there. So I chose carefully. I've seen the Ragnar piece before, so I tended to skip past that. There were some other gems there that I wanted to concentrate on. So it is a demanding art form. You know, you have to invest the time, and once you do that, you get the rewards. Some of the pieces are fantastic. I think Fly Paper by Khalil Joseph is a highlight for me.
Yeah.
I love the Camille Henrot. I've seen that a few times. It's interesting what Massimiliano Gioni's trying to achieve. He's the artistic director of the new museum. I think he said a lot of the works based on lyrical reportage. I found that really interesting, this kind of new
way. Love the idea of lyrical reportage.
Yes.
Right?
I guess it's a more personal approach to filmmaking. I think a lot of the filmmakers included have a debt to probably Chris Marker, the French filmmaker, especially the Khalil Joseph piece. So, yeah, it's an eye-opener, but definitely worth investing in. Pop along.
So you mentioned Massimiliano Gioni, who's the artistic director of the new museum. Holly Fisher, our producer on this programme, went down to the opening of this show and interviewed him. We should say that the new museum is New York's leading museum for contemporary art. It's the only one dedicated entirely to it. Its artistic director is Massimiliano, who also directed the 2013 Venice Biennale, the youngest curator ever to take that role. And Strange Days is a group show of 21 pieces of video art by 21 different artists. And all artists on show here have shown in the new museum in the last decade. But this isn't supposed to be a retrospective show, as Massimiliano told Holly at the unveiling.
Thank you. It is somehow a celebration of the museum because we inaugurated our space in December 2007, so it's now 10 years that we've been programming and working in the museum. I hope it doesn't feel self-referential. You know, I think the relevance of a show like this is if people that go through it think, wow, this is an interesting perspective on the history of video art of the last 10 years. I think that would be more relevant than the fact that they've been shown at the new museum. And we also had the fortune of being able to premiering many works that have never been seen in London. You know, Khalil Joseph, Pippi Lotti-Rist, Jonah Comfra, Vertigo C, Jonatas de Andrade, Hassan Khan. I would say more than 50% of the exhibition, or actually probably 80% of the exhibition, has never been seen in London, and many of these artists have never shown in London. So that is also very much part of the ethos of the new museum. I think it's also part of what the Vinyl Factory and the store want to do, to be a kind of platform where you see what you wouldn't see in London. You know, London is a bit like New York. It's incredibly cosmopolitan, very open, but still, these big cities have a lot of blind spots, and so it's interesting to be able to bring so much new material and information, and I hope to weave it into a narrative in which one video leads to another, and it becomes a, yeah, you know, you could think of it as a sort of intellectual autobiography of the new museum, but I think it's more exciting to think of it as a partial history of video art in the last 10 years.
And, I mean, the title of the show kind of has this kind of dreamlike quality, but, you know, we're kind of in strange days right now in our political situation. Did you want to kind of have a show that was somewhere between making a political statement and also escapism at the same time? How important do you think art is as escapism?
Yeah, that's a good question, because the question of escapism is particularly relevant when it comes to video, no? I think there is a lot of work that is political or, let's say, ethically invested in the show. You know, the work of Munir al-Sol that discussed the situation in Libya and Syria, the work of Hassan Khan, which, when was made, was read as a reference to the Arab Spring, or Vertigo C by Jonah Comfra, that is very much about environmental situation in the world. So I don't think it's a show about the spectacle as a place of retreat. I think that problem was very present in the generation that was making work in, you know, from the 1990s, the generation of Pierre Wig, Philippe Parrenot, in a sense the generation also of Pippi Lotti-Rist, but the younger generation, in a sense, is returning to confront themselves and the camera with reality. You know, I think one of the problems, which is very much in line with the strange days in which we live in, one of the problems that these works confront is the question of truth in images. You know, we, on one hand, we learned through, you know, decades of postmodernist rhetoric that we shouldn't trust cameras, and on the other hand, cameras are all we got. And you know, it's interesting that this show is up at the same time as a Turner Prize, where, for example, there is forensic architecture that uses camera to reconstruct historical events, or Pierre Wig at the Serpentine, which made the show very much about images in the brain. I think what these artists have in common is, on one hand, a desire to return to reality, and on the other, the, if you want, sublime or depressing consideration, that they realize that even in the most unconscious depth of our brain and our minds, we are already inhabited by media and by images that are, you know, they come from cameras. In a sense, is this, you know, revelation that the deepest fantasies are somewhat already mediated. And I think that's, in a sense, that dissolves any distinction between inside and outside, and if you will, also between escapism and political engagement, because they become sort of two phases of the same coin. Then the creator was in the form of a man without bones. Then the gravity of galaxies slowly expanded into the universe. Then were units of matter.
That was Massimiliano Gioni, who curated this show, who's the artistic director of the New Museum in New York, speaking to Holly Fisher. We mentioned all sorts of interesting themes there, obviously. I wondered if we could try and find a fulcrum, a kind of centrepiece of this show, I think one of the reasons he wanted to put it on was Khalil Joseph's Flypaper, mm-hmm. which maybe because of where it sits kind of halfway through the exhibition and the length of the film, it's a good 20-odd minutes long.
Mm. But it was
maybe
also...
feels like a centrepiece. Francesca?
Well, I was just saying, it was also the first commission between the New Museum and Vinyl Factory, where it was originally shown in their space in Berlin, and to great acclaim. What I particularly love, because it was a commission for them, and what Vinyl Factory, I think, are noticeably successful for coming from a music background, is their use of sound. Like, the Khalil Joseph piece literally rumbles
completely
through the building.
Yeah, depending upon where you... I mean, I was sitting right in front of the speaker block at the back there, and man, it really, it goes right through you.
Yeah, and I think that actually is super successful. I mean, I like sound spill. I don't mind where you feel like videos from different spaces are kind of like feeding into
each other
a little bit way. And Khalil Joseph is also an artist whose career really exploded partly because of the Rogoff earlier 180 The Strand film, which was a Kendrick Lamar collaboration. So Khalil's really interesting, I think. I mean, his brother set up the Underground Museum, Noah Horowitz, so he comes from like an art cultural background.
And so he directed the Beyoncé video Lemonade as well. So he's done all sorts of stuff. His toe is not just in pure artistic
waters. A bit of a showman,
yeah.
I mean, he kind of got adopted into the art world, and then everyone's like, no, what you're making is art. It was sort of like, you have no choice. You
I
can't
do pop
escape
videos.
This.
Hang on, mate. No, you don't.
Not really.
So Flypaper, as you say, first commission between those two as well. It's a celebration of Harlem. It's sort of celebration of black culture. There's sort of some very amazing, there's some sort of heart-stopping and memorable image-making in it. If we can take this one work, what does this tell us about the state of video art? Something that doesn't have to have necessarily a narrative, but something that's about striking imagery that messes around with time and reputation and things. What are some of the themes that we might take from just that one, I wonder?
I think it was the way, it's such an important, impressive collage. Mm. I think it included images of his late father. There was some new material. And I agree with Francesca. It was the theatricality of it, you know. That room is packed. I've been twice to see the show, and both times I couldn't actually get in the first time, which is, I think, is incredible.
And it's a huge room.
It's a huge room. So it's obviously a real centrepiece of the show. In terms of kind of breaking through, I guess, as I just said, he's a showman. So he's able to reach out to that millennial audience with new techniques and things, and it does stand out. It reminds me a lot of, I don't know, perhaps I'm being a bit naive, of Arthur Jaffa's Love is the Message.
There's definitely a relationship.
So there's
between
that kind
them.
Of, he's tapping into the political tumultuous times we live in. You know, it seems to strike a chord.
It's also really interesting because texturally it's quite varied. You've got like a girl on a mobile phone having a conversation. You've got incredibly well done dance sequences in it, and you've got like almost sort of like this intimacy, like there's it's a really variety of like visual textures within it, and the narrative is kind of blurry, but it is kind of political. It's very much a portrait of a space. I mean, his work is really interesting in terms of that,
and
but it's also very accessible, and I think this is how it becomes the crux of the show, because what they're doing there, what Gioni I think does very well throughout his practice as a curator, is create exhibitions that appeal to an audience far beyond the limitations of the art world.
It's also, there's big moments of noir in it. And noir was never a kind of, there were no black people in noir films, right?
There were some cultural exceptions.
But
to
you know
this,
what I mean? It feels like a really interesting thing to have. There is a sort of certain way of shooting these films, a certain way of dressing in these films, a certain way of directing these films, a certain way of taking the mood of a city, which feels like it kind of passed over an entire kind of race.
Well, but it's more in novels. If you could look in literature, there's a whole entire wave of like hard-boiled literature that is also, let's say, multicultural. I'm going to put it that way. And that includes some African-American background. And I think like Chester Himes, things like that.
Yeah.
So like there is like reference to that. But bringing that into someone who's worked with very mainstream people to a very broad audience who may not know those references, I think, is the difference.
But it's those deep themes, you know, memory, reverie. Yeah. You know, these are important big ideas. But yeah, they're being communicated in a very, I suppose, accessible, spectacular way. That's
I mean, my favourite film in this entire exhibition is Hasan Khan's 2010 film. He's an Egyptian artist.
Jewel?
Oh, God, Jewel. God, I love that film. I mean, I dare anyone to go into that room and not want to dance.
Yeah.
It's basically two Egyptian guys, one older, one younger. It starts with like some picture of almost like a piranha, and they start dancing together to like this kind of Egyptian electronic music, and I swear to God, it's like
infectious.
Oh my God, it's one of the best representations of age difference, cultural difference, kind of epitomizing what contemporary Egypt was. I mean, certainly at that time, which is very different. It was originally shown in the New Museum Triennial. I mean, a lot of these works, if you're like a super nerd in art like me, you've seen them before, but it's really nice seeing them again. Yeah. And for me, seeing Hasan Khan again and again, it's always worth it. I really, really recommend that.
So is that about Egyptian urban culture, I guess?
Yeah, it's almost, I mean, it almost feels like a taxi driver. See, the dance moves are just out of control good. And there's obviously loads of layering within all of it. And I think that's kind of what's great about a lot of these films. You'll see them, they'll have an immediate visual pleasure or an oral pleasure. I mean, Boy Child and Wu-Sang's collaboration Looks, which is basically Boy Child is a trans performer, often in a lot of Wu-Sang's films. Actually, they're in a relationship, lip-syncing to an R&B song called Unbreakable. And it's really, there's immediately, just for the pleasure of looking, you get something out of it. But obviously, there's so much more there about sexuality and identity and race and politics and all of those. And actually, the meaning of art itself, it always comes back to what art is.
I suppose that the fact is that a lot of the pieces are so technically accomplished, you know, that's where I enjoyed seeing. I think I enjoyed especially Wu-Sang's The Looks, which is what we were just saying. And to me, that was incredible, the way it switched from one screen to the next. You had to walk through the space. And some of those spaces are, I mean, perhaps this is an incidental detail, but some of those spaces are very well fitted and furnished, you know. And that's what Francesca was saying about the sound. The sound is incredible on most of these pieces. I think the work, is it The Fish, Jonathan de Andrade? I'm not sure how to pronounce that.
Yeah.
That it's difficult because that's in a room alongside two others. It's next to the jewel, actually.
Yep.
So how you kind of mix and meld the oral side is quite I would imagine it's quite a complex thing to do. That somehow they do it technically, and the sound and the oral immersive aspect of The Fish is incredible. Those guys holding those fish to their chest like babies. And yet you can hear the water lapping and you can hear the fish sort of sipping, whatever the word would be.
Sort of doing a bit of a gurgle.
Gurgling.
Yeah.
You know, I was transported.
I mean, I also love that there's a subtext on that floor. There are four works about fish.
Yes.
Basically, fish seems to be the subtext of the entire exhibition.
There's a lot of water in this.
There is.
John Akonfra's thing, which feels like another kind of, it's a big deal. It's a 42-odd minute film, that one. It takes a lot from documentary. It's on three huge screens. I really love that. I mean, its iconography, its attitude is pretty heavy. It's another one that is maybe more of a, I don't know, it seems like it's got more of a narrative. It's more kind of novelistic as a piece rather than something that is purely aimed at it looking wonderful and being able to have a kind of two-speed read on it.
What do we make
of this one?
I mean, I'm torn. I'm going to be a little bit spicy here and say I find it slightly contrived.
Oh, really? Interesting.
did you not like the people looking out to sea with their clocks and frock coats and things?
I did. I mean, he's obviously covering so many issues here, history of slavery, migration, conflict. I think what he most wants to highlight is the cruelty of the whaling industry. And that comes across. I just find it a little cloying after about 5 minutes, but you might disagree.
I mean, I don't know. If you see his films, and there's been a lot of them on in London, I think there's one on the Imperial War Museum still at the moment. He had a solo show at the Barbican last year. He had an incredible show that was kind of forgotten and included in the Tate Tanks earlier, I think last year. His films are very cinematic. They're very much multi-screen documentaries, and you really have to sit through them.
Yeah.
They're long. And he's a British artist who's kind of been working away for decades and never really got his full attention until recently. So the work is very long. It's very cinematic, but on multiple screens. It takes time.
It's brainy stuff. I mean, I won't deny that. I think he's drawing on Moby Dick, the Williams poem Whale Nation.
Yeah.
This is quite intelligent material.
There's a lot of stuff in there.
Of course there is. So, and again, that was the room that was the busiest when I was there. So cinematic pieces pulling the people, obviously, but I can see why.
I mean, I saw that originally, again, in Gioni's Venice. And I have to say, it almost brought you to tears there. But maybe it's also context. By the time you've come across the Akonfra after you've seen 2.5 other hours of film, you're a bit knackered.
Also, there's a lot
of
stuff.
It's a show you want to go back to.
There's a lot of funny stuff in there as well. There's a lot of stuff that is visually very striking, that plays more of a visual trick than a narrative trick on you. So I suppose this one you know, especially depending upon how much time you've got during a week like last week, how long you can go around and look at it, how nourishing that thing can be. It also reminded me of how good documentaries are, mm-hmm. actually, as well. We're talking about video art, but how nourishing, visually nourishing and narratively nourishing really good documentary can be. Because I think a lot of stuff was taken, obviously, is old documentary footage, even sort of the exploration of the South Pole and all the rest of it is in there as well. So it kind of reminded me of the fact that we're closer to sometimes watching the TV or going to the cinema than we sometimes like to think when we're in an art context. Do you know what I mean?
A lot of the things in there as well. I mean, a lot of the other work, let's say, I mean, and I really enjoyed them, the Pipilotti Rest, you're lying down in a bed looking up like you're in a sing under a ceiling, or the Oliver Larrick, which is a great moving animation.
Yeah, I love that. Things.
I love that.
Yeah, but a lot of those, there are also things that you can dip in and out of. Mm. There are much more passing experiences, whereas there's a real contrast within the desire to actually, like, sit and go to the movies.
But it's interesting, the communal aspect, the Pipilotti wrist, the fact that people, so many people are lying on the beds to look up at the wrist on the ceiling. That communal aspect is fascinating.
Yeah.
And I thought a lot about video, and, you know, this is trying to provoke some kind of physical sensory engagement. And I guess, you know, we don't get that from a smartphone or a tablet when we watch a film as such. But this is encouraging some kind of group bonding, mm-hmm. and it does work. The wrist is fantastic to think that we're all lying there,
yeah,
watching something together. I felt this meditative.
I felt this yesterday when I saw the show, that there's a strange thing that happens when you sit in a dark room with, and someone sits down next to you on a bench that you have in an art show, very different to the cinema seating when you go and see a screening of a film to review that film, and everyone's sort of sitting there with their notepads out. And this felt, there's something intimate and interesting and charged about that.
Exactly.
It's very different to a cinema, or obviously sitting on your sofa at home, clearly. but there is something about that. There's something about that atmosphere.
Well, maybe that's the point of exhibitions. Yeah. So, like, what is the point of an exhibition? To get us to have some kind of experience that is where you become aware of you as an audience, you as a viewer, other people as a viewer. How does my body stand in relationship to the screen next to your body in relationship to the screen? It's much less closed. We're not in our little Black Mirror bubble here, and I think that's super positive. This is why I'm a great encourager of going to see shows.
Yeah, exactly.
No. I mean, even Pipilotti Rist, I think she said she wants people to jump out of loneliness with the piece.
Wow, what a quote.
Yeah.
I think she's succeeded.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good because it's funny and it's a bit awkward, and you're kind of presented with the human body up so close, and you're prone on a bed with people that you've never met before. Maybe you have. The art world is small. Anyway.
It's weirdly intimate, I
yes,
have to say.
Yes, weirdly intimate. We've kind of run out of time on that particular show. You might come back to it at the end. But Gareth, it reminded you of a couple of things that you wanted to talk about. Ming Smith and Dawood Bey. Talk us through this.
Yeah, last year I saw an excellent show at Nottingham Contemporary called States of America, which was a photography show, and it included works by Dawood Bey and Ming Smith, who both portray Harlem as such. So it made me think of the Khalil Joseph work.
Yeah, Flypaper.
Yeah, Flypaper. Francesca and I were talking about this before we came in. You know, I think Ming Smith is one of the most underrated photographers that there is. She was the first African-American female photographer whose work was acquired by MoMA in New York. Not many people know that. Her works are fantastic. She's experimental. She photographed the inhabitants of Harlem, well, from the 1970s to the 1990s. And some of her images are just breathtaking. Casablanca, Harlem in 1973. There's an image called American Dream Harlem from 1972, which shows a Father Christmas inebriated on his side. But these poetic responses to life in Harlem. So I think she's just fantastic. Dawood Bey, I think he shot a series of works in Harlem in the late 70s. His family, I think, used to go to church there, so he was immersed in life. He used to attend tent revival meetings. And I think his works are really important. You know, they show barbers, men in bowler hats. He does not court stereotypes at all. And his career has just come along in leaps and bounds. We were discussing this. You know, again, he's underrated and overlooked.
Completely.
So, you know, Harlem for me, that was a touchstone of the show on the Strand. And it made me think about these two photographers in a much more considered way.
Two undiscovered gems, at least until Gareth Harris starts talking about them. Francesca, you wanted to talk about something. I presume this was something that was in London in time for Frieze,
yeah,
Ryan Gander.
2 weeks. Yeah. It's called The Annotated Reader, and it was put together by a listen artist, Ryan Gander, alongside a curator, Jonathan P. Watts. It's probably, for me, this is the entire point of what something like Frieze is, which is creating an audience and having discussions and seeing things you wouldn't normally get to see. He did a pop-up space on Cork Street, and he invited loads, and they invited loads of different artists, everyone from Marina Abramović and Oliver Eliasson to small young people, to critics, to pick a book that they like, usually a critical book, take 2 pages, photocopy it, annotate it, and then these were printed and hung on like false cap that you could tear off the wall.
False cap. Don't get much of that these days.
No,
I love
exactly.
It
was a really DIY thing, but basically they were giving away the most incredible annotated reading list and pages of information that were fascinating by hundreds of books that me, even as like an academic art critic, had never heard of. And it was, for me, it was a way of discovering new things to write about, how artists think, how ideas inform what they make, how like ideas around politics. There's everything from Bertolt Brecht to feminist theory from the 70s to Marina Abramović doing a picture of something. It was David Batchelor drawing on top of pieces of found thing. It was super inspiring. I honestly think it was the whole entire point of doing anything like Frieze, that it shouldn't just be about purchase, and things can be free and engaging and interesting to a broad, wonderful audience. This is also free, like 180.
Trust Ryan Gander to do something like this as well, right? I mean, it's such a sort of impish kind of imagination.
That's
and
so
sort of a deep reading of the situation he finds himself in as a successful contemporary artist. And also, I kind of think, an appreciation of the people falling through the gaps, perhaps.
Well, I mean,
as well,
I become really interested in about how do you, like, what's the entire point of what I do as a critic or a curator, what we do, all of us here? We want to share information with as broad, with people outside who wouldn't necessarily see it. And I think if you're doing exhibitions that are free, politically, I think that's an incredibly important thing to do, which both these shows do. If you're actually sharing information, like, and make it, if you make one person read one of those books, and I think Ryan Gander and Jonathan have been immensely successful in what they do.
And you're right, Strange Days is free.
Yeah, Strange Days is free and runs for months. Mm. And I think what's so interesting is, and I think that's what they've really discovered, and Somerset House next door, that entire area has really become a hub for a very broad generation of people who don't necessarily go to art exhibitions wanting to engage with things. And yeah, I think music's a real way in for that.
Yes, exactly. And the things that are done, I mean, obviously Somerset House with its studios as well, there's interesting people walking in and out of all those buildings around there, in UCL, I suppose, right there as well.
And King's, it's in the middle, yeah.
King's, I mean, not UCL. Right in the middle there. It's a vibrant part of town. Well, we should encourage people to get down there, because, yeah, it's free, and it needs at least 2 goes at, I would have said, the Strange
I've done
days.
It twice, and I still probably could do it again if I actually
want to.
Will
you go back? I might.
It might happen if I'm in the area. I see quite a lot of other things.
We should say, on Ryan Gander there, that The Annotated Reader, that show in Cork Street, has finished, but it is a book, so people might want to search for that. And try and look that out, as recommended by Francesca Gavin.
Yes, highly recommended.
Sadly, folks, that brings us to the end of today's programme. Strange Days, Memories of the Future is on until the 9th of December at the store at 180 The Strand. Thanks, of course, to my guests, Francesca Gavin and Gareth Harris, for their words of wisdom. And thanks, too, to my producer, of course, Holly Fisher. We'll be back at the same time next week with a report from Cannes as I head to MIPCOM to get the lowdown on what we're going to be watching over the next year on the small screen. But for the time being, from me, Robert Bound, thank you very much for tuning in.